Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Look, you want to push the button, you do it yourself.
If it's not real, then what are you doing here, Jack? Why did you come back? Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
It's a leap of faith, Jack.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I've built a mobile for a stolen baby, and the song it plays is When You Wish Upon a Star, the best Disney song of all time.
My name is Joanna Robinson. I, too, have built a mobile for a baby that I've stolen. And because I'm a child of the 80s and have seen Three Men and a Baby many times, I know the best song to see the baby to sleep is Goodnight, Sweetheart. So that is what plays on my mobile that I have created for a stolen baby.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I have created a mobile that plays Leaving on a Jet Plane.
Cute.
But also, for some reason, it's the version of Ben Affleck singing it in Armageddon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, are there animal crackers? Are you going to dance animal crackers on the baby belly? Love it.
Sure. Yeah, it's all part of whatever weird
up
situation.
Up north to the mountainous regions or way, way down south.
Is that what
where
he
I
says?
Put an animal cracker in your pants.
Says?
Oh. Yeah,
he does
the mountainous
say that,
region.
Yeah.
The mountainous region? Oh, Liv.
Well, it's an animal.
Liv, you could do better.
The worst Batman. All right, my name is Dave, and we're here for The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for the episode Maternity Leave. It's season 2, episode 15. We're going to be talking about a Claire flashback episode. If this is your first time joining us, interesting time to be joining us in the run of Lost, but we're very happy to have you. We split this podcast into two different sections. The first one we call The Calm, and we will only be talking about things that have happened on Lost through season 2, episode 15, Maternity Leave. We will not be talking about anything we know from the future seasons of Lost, and by future, I mean they happened in the past, which means you could have already watched them. If you're a rewatcher, you could join us for the second half of our podcast. It's called The Storm, and you look down at your podcast device. There will be time codes as to when the calm starts, when the storm starts, so you don't get spoiled if you don't want to. If you would like to support this podcast beyond what you're doing right now, which is listening, and thank you very much for doing that, you can go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There we will offer you bonus content for very, very small subscription fees, including bonus episodes, movie clubs, book clubs. That's where you watch and read books with us. Watch and read books. Actually, yeah, that is kind of accurate. Figure out exactly what I mean by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. A very important announcement. We've been in the Patreon hatch, pushing the Patreon button. And every couple of minutes, we have to, refresh things to keep things together and tight and operating so the island doesn't blow up and destroy the entire world. And because of that, we're going to alter our pay structure a little bit, starting on the 18th of March. That will be the week that some very dramatic things happened on the island in Lost. But we will also be getting rid of our lowest Patreon level, the $1 level. If you are currently subscribed to the $1 level, don't worry. We're going to be contacting you about what we're doing. We're not forcing you to move up if you don't want to, and we're not stripping any content away from you. However, after March 18th, you will not be able to become a $1 patron. So once again, after March 18th, there will no longer be a $1 subscription level, but the good news is there will be a more audio content and very clearly defined levels at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There are ways to get a hold of us that don't involve patreon.com. You could send us reviews to review the show. That helps people find us and listen to this show and maybe pick up Lost for the first time or another time. Or you could send us emails if you have questions about Lost. We will read the Calm Ones in the Calm section and the Storm Ones in the Storm section. We do not want to be unintentionally spoiling anyone. Joanna, how do people get in contact with us, send us reviews or emails?
There are so many ways, Dave, and I'm so glad you asked. If you guys want to email us, hosts@stormpodcast.com is the way to email us. Hey, Neil, how many emails do you think we got this week from listeners about the TV show Lost?
13 million.
We got zero.
Whoa.
What the hey?
I was way off.
It's almost as if there's like a disease outbreak and everyone else is worried about something else. Anyway, this is a show about vaccines, guys. So you should definitely send us emails. We did not get any new emails this week about the TV show Lost. And we would love to hear from you, hosts@stormpodcast.com. Your emails are really, I find them very thought-provoking. And I know we're going to have a lot to talk about as season two rounds out. So we'd love to hear from you guys there. We did get some reviews though. You can rate and review the podcast on iTunes. We really appreciate it when you do that. And I will go ahead and read two of those reviews right now. One of them requests an accent that I know I can't do. So, we'll see what happens. Okay. So, the first one comes from the IRI or the Eerie. I'm not sure how to pronounce this, but it's 5 stars. Terrific. And they write, love this podcast. The hosts have great chemistry and not only know a lot about Lost, but about TV and film in general, which tends to add a lot of great context and information to the discussion. Thanks so much for that. Okay. Now here's the second review with the accent challenge. 5 stars. And then the title of the review is Chef's Kiss, Wonderful Podcast. From
sorry, I just pictured you going like, "Aren't this fern the birds born? Aren't the boy in the garden born?" And just doing all chef speak.
This is by Pia Bass or Pia Bass 1018. And they write, "If you'd like to do some accent work for this review, feel free to look up the Delco accent from the Philadelphia suburbs." Okay, review time. So, okay, I'm just going to talk about this accent for a second before absolutely not doing it. And I believe that this is the accent that says like water, right?
Yer.
What is it?
Yin and yer and the water. Yeah. I think that's water, all the same.
John. Right. It's the accent that like Tina Fey really likes to do for some of her characters. Like Tina Fey, I think, is especially proud that she can do this Philadelphia accent. I cannot do it. So I shall not be doing it. But thank you so much for the challenge. All right. The review says, hey, y'all, just about wrapped up binging through your Lost episodes right now, and I'm feeling compelled to leave a review. The show was so influential to me growing up, and being able to re-inhabit this world for hours at a time has been the best part of my 2020 so far. And being guided through the world by three knowledgeable and hilarious hosts adds yet another layer to my affection for the world of this show. I unfortunately missed the bandwagon to watch the show live, but I got into it shortly after season 6 had wrapped and it was still in the zeitgeist, so I figured I'd check it out. I wasn't really on any internet fan communities, so I was really just experiencing the show with my own thoughts and not much else. Now that I'm much older and coming back to this material, I'm noticing so many more things and feeling so many different ways than I did before, and it's almost like watching for the first time again. I'm so excited to add the show into my weekly rotation, and I'm looking forward to reliving all the twists and turns again alongside the three of y'all. And then they write, I'm going to read this. It's nice about me, but listen, there's a viral outbreak in these here United States, so I'm going to need nice things. P.S. Joanna, you could never, ever talk too much. You're wonderful, and so is your voice. Thanks. I need to hear that. I appreciate it. All right. So that is, those are our reviews this week. You could tweet at us at Storm Podcast. We've been running some polls over on Twitter. It's a good way to sort of get your voice heard about the most important matters pertaining to Lost, aka whomst should be kissing whomst. You can go to our website, stormpodcast.com. We've got our calendar, our release schedule of the podcast, upcoming events, etc. So yeah, the only other feedback I got this week was in an Instagram direct message, and which is a fun and exciting way to try to reach out to me. Anyway, the person said something really nice about the podcast, and then they made a request for more Storm, which is a request I often hear, which is the spoiler section of the podcast. So I've written myself copious Storm notes this week in the hopes of addressing that. So we'll see how much we get to. But it is my intention to fulfill that request, random Instagram commenter. And that is my section done.
People just yelling at you as you walk down the street, more Storm! What a world. Before we get to that slightly expanded Storm, let's start where we always start with the calm. Neil, what happened this week on the island?
Yes, this maternity leave episode was directed by Jack Bender. It was written by Don Lambertson Kelly and Matt Raggianti. Wow, I didn't know that we were going to get to the hard names so quickly. it aired on March 1st, 2006. It takes place on days 58 and 59. On the island, in flashbacks, we have another island-based flashback episode. This is number two, if we count the one, the other 48 days. In the flashback, Claire begins to remember her time with Ethan, her escape, and the young woman who helped her escape, and the time Russo whacked her in the head so hard she forgot the whole thing. On the island, the baby is sick. Claire is panicking, and then Russo shows up to make it weird by claiming that Aaron is infected with some kind of, you know, virus, relevant in our current time. With Libby's help, Claire begins to remember what happened when she was taken. She and Kate eventually decide to run off into the jungle to find Russo, but not before Kate has to go get a gun from Sawyer, which, you know, that's kind of fun sometimes. In the hatch, Mr. Echo figures out that Henry Gale is down there and wishes to speak with him. In the, you know, back in the jungle, Claire and Kate find Russo, then go on a hike of mystery to find another hatch.
Hatch!
This particular hatch is a creepy underground hospital hatch.
Woo! Yeah. That's my favorite kind, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. It's the best kind, with the flickering lights and everything.
Oh, I love it.
It all ends with Claire
deciding...
Well, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Wait, to make this, like... creepy abandoned medical hatch complete. Can I get a leftover fake beard in a locker?
Exactly.
Excellent. Thank you.
It all ends with Claire deciding that she loves her baby and wants to keep him. And Henry Gale using some alone time with John to try and drive a wedge between Locke and Jack. And maybe it's working. And I don't think we should trust this guy. Fun fact, Michael does not appear in this episode. All right, this week's calm question. Thumbs up or thumbs down on Sawyer's new glasses? Let's start with Dave.
Thumbs down. Oh, I liked the aesthetic of the two glasses melted together. I'm sad that they got lost out on the ocean with the raft, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Joanna, thumbs up or thumbs down on Sawyer's glasses?
I just need to take another look at them. Hold on. I'm looking at
these,
them.
These are the...
I'm looking.
They're kind of like brown and
the Edna Mode glasses.
I'm looking at them right now. I mean, as a wearer of Edna Mode glasses, I can't argue. Oh, I love them. They could be like a little more square. If they were a little more square, they'd be more like mine. So he could make them like a little more square. But I'm
all right. Yeah, I think I'm also thumbs up mostly because of how much he just really owns them. Like, he's just like, you like my new glasses? which is good. It shows that Sawyer has a funnier side when he's not negotiating about who gets guns.
I'm not saying Sawyer will wear any other glasses before this show is done, but I will promise you this. By the end of our conversations about Lost, I will rank all of Sawyer's glasses.
Very important.
The perfect amount of cryptic, I think. all right. So after last week's episode of Desert Storm flashback and some hatch torture, we are finally back to do a ladies episode. Or in the sense that our females take the lead. And very notably, as Joanna was bringing up off podcast, do not bring along a lot of their usual cohorts. This isn't a ruling class team. This isn't a team of couples. This is a team of ladies who are willing to traipse into the jungle with guns to get things done. And as of right now, that makes up Claire, Russo, and Kate. Not that Sun isn't capable of traipsing into the jungle and getting things done, but she has some very real concerns about leaving the baby behind. Here's the thing. Having watched the entire episode, I understand that you need to get Claire into the jungle. That being said, there's a certain amount of, I think, earlier in the episode, this idea that people who have children have been through that experience and, like Claire, will be like to Sun, like, pull the mother card. Like, are you a mother? Then maybe you should keep your own opinion. And then other people who haven't, you know, been around people or who've given birth recently, I think write some sort of write off a lot of pregnancy hysteria as viable pregnancy hysteria, when really I think Claire goes through some very odd, in terms of television storytelling, decision making to get her into the jungle. I absolutely believe that, yes, the episode needs to get Claire in the jungle, and I love the stuff of her trying to, like, figure out her old memories and her and Kate stumbling upon Russo and then them finally coming upon the medical hatch. I like all of that. What I don't like is her, like, yelling at Libby to, like, hypnotize her for some real reason. Assuming that being hypnotized, like, 5 feet away from your crying baby is going to allow you to be calm in any sort of way. Screaming your way out of the hypnotism, not explaining yourself, and then being like, there's a vaccine in the jungle, and Kate, you have to do it. And then, discounting Jack completely and handing the baby over to Sun and pulling the mom card on Sun. I don't like any of that. Am I, Joanna and Neil, being a weird...
Yep.
Oh, all right.
Listen.
Yeah.
Sawyer has followed a boar, B, a frog into the jungle. Kate has followed horses. Jack has followed the ghost of his dad. Like, all these people have followed weird shit into the jungle. And, like, Claire, I'm in favor of everything Claire does, including... you know, being the first to use, our new asset, Island Shrink, Libby. yeah, is she like a little like wound up? Sure as heck is, but her baby's sick and she's in a jungle of mystery. So, she's doing no more screaming than Jack usually does. So I'm in favor of Claire.
Also, Russo walked up at the worst possible time and whispered in her ear, "It's coronavirus."
Yeah, like, that's a good point.
That would freak you out because that lady's crazy. But also, she was right about the black smoke thing, even though I think she started that fire.
I'm not using the C word around Russo. That lady knows a lot of stuff. And she's right about a lot of stuff. I think they started with her in that characterization, and she's since been right about so many things that I, like, am not sure that we can. And I like that she has her own agenda and motivation for going.
I don't want to get too far off lost here, but aren't you just saying, like, so there's a woman with a sick baby who yells everybody into doing what she wants. Isn't that just an anti-vaxxer?
No, she's pro-vax. She's trying to get the vaccine.
She needs
it's an imaginary vaccine. She doesn't know that it exists. It's
she
like
remembers
this weird thing
the
in her
needle
head.
Going into her belly.
She did last time, and everybody was okay to say that was a dream before.
No,
I
think you're being gently sexist, and it's okay.
All right, fine. I mean, it's basically she has the opposite problem of Coach Taylor in Godzilla King of the Monsters, where because he's a father of a daughter, he tells the military what to do. So it can go both ways, but I think in both ways it's like, it's a writer's shortcut. It's like we allow, as a society, we allow for crazy women under a certain number of circumstances.
I'm going to keep pushing back on this C word because, like, she's right. There's a they learn a lot by going to that hatch. She was right about what she remembered.
All right, let's call her ethereal.
She's at. Are you talking about? Because he was talking about. No, he was talking about Claire this time.
Oh no, I was thinking about Rousseau.
Yeah, I know you were thinking about Rousseau, and like the C word around Rousseau. I just like try not to use it in general. But like the C word around Rousseau is much more applicable here with Claire. She's agitated, and she's right. So like. You know, I don't think it's
well. She's agitated, but she's not right.
She's mostly right. She's wrong in her characterization of Rousseau, but she's right that to remember Ethan, to remember the hatch, to remember the needle,
yes,
to remember
yes,
all of that.
But she thinks it's going to cure her baby, and her baby is cured without them finding anything.
Sure, but it was
the reality
going
is
in
she
to
left
look
a
for the hatch
a sick. Helpless baby.
Oh my god.
On the beach.
You're making me so
and she
mad.
Took a
I'm gonna go on a jungle
trip.
I'm gonna
think
go on
about the baby.
I'm gonna go on a jungle trip without you.
fair.
I will say this, you know, in favor of a man in this episode, I love Sawyer in this episode because if we want to talk about like the, maybe it's a low bar. Like Sawyer just did something pretty bad really recently. So I'm not trying to let Josh Holloway in a pair of glasses like make me forget that so quickly. That being said, his line reading of like, you know, well, I got medicine. Like I'm gonna help the baby. I would help. And then like Kate's like, no, like we're going, calls her Thelma, great nickname, and then gives her a gun, exactly what Jack would like won't do. And he just like, and he like, he sees her energy. He sees that she like is gonna do this. She wants to be the leader of this little like pack going into the jungle. She doesn't want him to come along. She doesn't need him to come along. And he respects her and he gives her the gun. And that's what I like about the Sawyer Kate dynamic is like, he sees her, he sees her value, and he like always respects her and doesn't patronize her. So, you know,
I think, Sawyer, I definitely think his heart is open to the jungle's mysteries, whereas Jack, on the other hand, is super he's doctor dismissive of Claire, where he's just like, oh, it's, and he's ultimately right about the baby get better, but like, I feel like they didn't interrogate the question of like, you know, I feel like there was never any like, they never really sort of dig into like why Claire is remembering these things other than Libby told her to breathe.
Well, I think Libby, it's interesting because...
Is it because it's Rousseau, right? Like, the Rousseau's the trigger for her to remember these things?
Probably, but they have that whole thing where Libby comes up and she's like, you probably don't have amnesia. You're, like, blocking it as a way of sort of, like, undoing that TV trope. But I think it's Rousseau that triggers it because, like, I don't... Yeah, she's worried about the sick baby, but it isn't until Rousseau says, like, infected... that she starts having the needle alarm flashbacks, which are very alarming. After spending several episodes settling into a flashback sound, I was not ready to suddenly be popped into an alarm flashback sound. That was super disorienting.
I think what I'm saying is that I agree with Joanna. Sawyer is a hero in this episode. Jack's kind of useless.
Sawyer's a hero by doing nothing because sometimes that's what you need to do. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
And
sometimes you gotta trust Kate.
The right type of nothing, because Jack also does nothing, but it's the wrong type of nothing, because Jack's whole philosophy in this episode regarding the torture is like, well, we've been doing pointless things all along, why don't we keep doing pointless things? And like, that's one of the dumbest things Jack has ever said, which is like, let's not deal with this issue, which is, I think, Jack's entire position this episode. Every issue that comes up, Jack's like, not yet. It feels like kind of like the showrunners in that sense.
But I do like the, I think it's, this is like, I don't think we've seen this many women working together, this many female characters working together since like, I don't know, that time when they found the bottle and had to tell Sun about it. But that wasn't the A plot. That was like the F plot of an episode. This is the A plot of the episode. You've got, Rousseau, Kate, and Claire on a mission, and I think that's really cool. And I think that the fact that Charlie and Saeed, who are Charlie, who's usually in a Claire episode, and Saeed, who's usually in a Danielle episode, are not even in this episode is even cooler. Cause it's just nice to have Rousseau out. I like Rousseau and Saeed a lot, but it's nice to have Rousseau outside the context of Saeed, and it's nice to have Claire outside the context of Charlie. Cause she's so often seen, you know, as just part of Charlie's story rather than part of her own story. And I also love, like, the Claire flashbacks are among the weakest on the show, I think. And so I love this episode for her because the flashbacks are an on-island flashback, which is both a fun, like, playing with the form and also, like, actually makes Claire's flashbacks more interesting, I think. So.
Yeah, and I think really hammers home. I mean, they wanted to draw parallels to her and Danielle ever since the, like, baby stealing of season one, but they weren't sympathetic parallels until this episode, which I think it does a lot of work in terms of, well, not Kate. Kate's just good because she does Kate and she's unapologetic about it. But for Rousseau and Claire, I think there's a lot of good development in just seeing how they interact beyond, like, the one thing they do. Maybe that's what I'm reacting to earlier on in the episode, is it's so refreshing to have Claire have an episode where, yeah, it's sort of about her pregnancy, but it's not about her, like, having pregnancy problems, that I just like all the back end stuff of, like, remembering in the jungle and tearing down the cover before, like, the other hatch, or debating with Rousseau over, you know, if either of them found what they were looking for. It's just that first part, rough start for me, but I really like once we get into the jungle how things come about.
I hear what you're saying, and I think part of it, I mean, Claire is not a character that always works for me, so I'm gonna try to soften my position and come meet you in the middle somewhere, which is like, Claire is not a character that always works for me. If I'm being really honest, and I don't mean to be like rude, I think it's because I don't think Emily DeRaven is the strongest performer on the show. And so I think some of her, like, outburst moments would work for me better coming from a different performer, possibly. You know what I mean?
That might be it, because when she makes, like, her badass poses in the jungle later on, I'm like, why have I not seen Claire like this? And it's like, oh yeah, because she was physically pregnant the entire first season, and the entire second season, she's mostly been trying to stop Charlie from stealing her baby. So it's nice. I don't know. Maybe I want more Claire without Aaron. Maybe that's what I'm actually yearning for, because he's been such, you know, an anchor to what. Let me get deeper about this. The way that Charlie's drug storyline is sort of underserving Charlie, Claire. To this episode, I finally got a glimpse of what's beyond Claire and her pregnancy.
Yeah.
There's a drive behind her, for justice, or for being active in her own solution that hasn't been there for previous episodes. And I like that. So when it started off being like another Claire has a baby problem episode, I was less impressed, but it doesn't matter because it sticks the landing, which is great. And I'm also glad we don't have to deal with Saeed and Charlie, especially since they're both on Team Evil now, essentially, according to the music of the show.
Oh, yeah, they're off creating an evil army together.
No.
That's what they were doing during this episode. I see. I also really do like the way they recontextualize Rousseau. Or that they've started. Because it's not, she's easy for the other characters in the camp to write off because of her behavior previously.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think both Kate and Claire, and obviously the audience, are starting to learn, you know, more about her story and what she's looking for. And I feel like you can start to see the writer's room understand that they do eventually want us to like this character, or they want us to like this character in the near future at the very least. So I think it's really good at the end there when she talks about not finding what she was looking for, and then Claire's realization that she was helping her and not, you know, one of them, is really important for Rousseau, because Rousseau is a really good character.
Yeah, I think we've gotten other puzzle pieces where it's like the others took her baby, and like the others take children. We saw Jungle Teddy Bear, so we know they aren't like eating the kids, and now there's a blue-eyed teenage girl running around. So there's hope. There's hope for Danielle yet.
I mean, yeah, this is our first look at Alex, right, in this episode?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just like that they're using Russo for more than just directions.
She's credited as teenage girl, but, like, I don't think it's a spoiler for us to say, like, that's Alex, right?
Yeah, they put it together at the end there.
Yeah.
Claire makes the connection.
Yeah. So that actress is Tanya Raymond. And I love that casting because, like, first of all, she has got one of the most interesting faces in the world. And secondly, when Claire's making her connection at the end of the episode, and she's like a blue-eyed teenage girl and the camera's on the actress who plays Russo, Mira Furlan's face, you're just sort of like, I see it in the eyeballs. You know what I mean? I mean, they got similar hair too and stuff like that, but you really see it. And Russo in that moment, you know, to follow up on your point, Neil, I think something that Lost does really well, and we'll see it with other people before this season is out, but something that Lost does really well is recognize when they have a great performer, like if they've cast someone for a role, recognizing when that performer can do so much more and then giving them more to do. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, I would say Josh Holloway was cast to be sort of the, you know, whatever your Survivor parallel is, Richard Hatch, I don't know, of like, you know, shitster, like, you know, baddie of the island.
He's the bad boy.
Yeah. But then Josh Hall and like this most recent Sawyer episode is sort of an example of that. Like, ooh, that's what a bad guy does in a group or whatever. But like Josh Holloway, was like, yeah, that's not all I'm going to let this character be, and like brought so much to it that they made Sawyer much more than that. And I would say for Russo, you know, and I think that applies to other characters like Jorge Garcia, basically, like, you know, the cream rises, right? Like, you know, the actors who are the most capable of just really digging in and giving us like meatier stuff, and then like the people who can't get there, like Ian Somerhalder, and they're like, okay, you're handsome, but bye, sort of thing. And so, you know, that's a long-winded way of saying that Mira Furlan, who plays Russo, she could have just been like this, you know, batshit, you know, I don't know why I'm willing to say batshit and not crazy, but like this batshit woman living in the jungle who shows up and gives directions or blows things up or whatever. But they're like, her humanity comes through so much in this episode, especially at the end when she's just like overwhelmed with her emotion about hearing about her daughter. And, I love that Claire and Russo moment. And I love that they saw that capability, that ability in that actress, and gave that to her to work with, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, she does a lot of good work of slowly coming to realize what the people around her are talking about just on her face in a way that I get endless pleasure out of.
Plus, she needed time to acclimate to humans again because she's been alone for a very long time. And then, like, you know, Saeed is helping her bring her back to herself. And so now she's able to communicate with more people.
Yeah, she just needs, like, six more years and she'll have a solid 15-minute stand-up performance.
I also love Kate in this episode. Whenever Kate is, like, defensive of Claire or Kate's connection to Claire, they don't use it as much as I'd like them to do. Like, Kate is usually just in whatever the Jack and Sawyer bullshit. But, like, you know, let's remember that Kate helped Claire deliver. And like, so when she's, you know, when Russo is there and Kate just like storms up and she's like, oh, you get your weird hair away from her. Or, you know, I think she did that the other week too, when Charlie was trying to talk to Claire and Kate's like, no, 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 no. So like Kate as a protector of Claire and Aaron is a role I really like for her as well. So,
yeah, this is a, probably one of the better Kate episodes. It's definitely one of the best ones we've seen so far, in the sense that, just as Dave was describing, that he enjoyed Claire without Aaron, I enjoy Kate without Jack. Like, because we get to see a lot of the time when Kate tries to have a take charge moment, Jack is there to be like, no. Like, no, you can't do that. Or like, I have all the guns or whatever. So it's kind of nice to see Kate have a take charge moment. And then she has this sort of, you know, sweet, contentious moment with Sawyer where he does ultimately give her a gun. But the rest of it is just Kate being like, I'm in charge here. let's kick some ass or drive off into the jungle.
Before we get into the other things and whatnot, let's stick with Claire a little bit, because we get a whole bunch of flashback information.
A whole bunch of jungle mystery.
Yeah, one of the benefits of having your flashback take place on the island is you could do 100% like everything mythology mystery dump, like pops its little head out. Ethan comes back. He's nice. We think maybe he's not on the island, but it turns out he's holding a drugged Claire in this hatch. And they have a room that they're going to keep Aaron in. And we see a guy that looks really familiar, but he doesn't have a beard. And then later we figure out the beard was fake. Joanna, it says here in the notes, Joanna wants to talk about Mr. Friendly.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that some people know this, if you're watching for the first time, that the guy that Ethan's talking to in the hallway, who has no beard on his face, is the same guy who said, like, we're going to have to take the boy about Walt and also light him up, just a few episodes ago in the jungle, when they had Kate captive. So that is the character known as Mr. Friendly, and we find out that his beard is fake. And not only that, but, like this idea of them as like rumpled weirdos who live in the jungle seems to be fake, because Ethan's like quite cleaned up. So I'm not, you know, this whole like,
yeah, they both look like they've showered recently.
Yeah, so they've got their own hatch shower is what it would appear. No, like what we have seen of the others is they look like very dirty, bedraggled people who maybe live in the jungle. Like they look like Rousseau level of hygiene, right? Mm-hmm. And that seems to be an act, is what this episode tells me. So
correct, they're at least making use of the hatch that they found, and probably another one, because that hatch has been vacated by the time Claire returns, and it looks like stuff's been abandoned. The vials of supposed vaccine that she gets injected with has the Dharma like logo on it. So really, we have the others and the Dharma, I think, are meeting for the first time in terms of those two island mysteries sort of getting more intertwined. But yeah, the fact that they're not actually brown clothes wearing mud people means that there's really a clean child somewhere with a very muddy bear he insists on dragging around with him.
mud people
with the mud bear. Yeah, so more island of mysteries there. I'm gonna jump to both of our jungle mystery moments, because they both happen in the medical hatch. One, as we mentioned, is fake beards, but one is my favorite, which is hatch in a hatch. There is an escape hatch in the medical hatch. It's like this tiny little thing that looks like you have to crawl through, but when Ethan's leading Claire through the medical hatch to lead her out, he leads her past the little thing that says escape hatch. Escape hatch in a hatch. It's a hatch in a hatch. There's hatches on hatches in this show. And I love season two.
So really, we have
hatches.
Two new hatches to think about.
That's exactly right.
The real question is if they're no longer in the medical hatch, what hatch are they hatching in now? You know what I mean?
Right, because like, they also talk like there are other people.
Right. Others?
Yeah. Well, and we know that there are others because we've seen more than just the two.
Right. Mr. Friendly.
But they're spread out enough that Ethan could have secretly taken Claire against some male presence's wishes.
Mr. Friendly mentions a him, right?
Correct. And so they're definitely spread out enough that you can keep a secret in one of your little jungle hashes.
But it seems like he is in charge, right?
Yes, there's a he in charge, or at least
or
above
they're
Mr.
deeply
Friendly.
Religious.
Where they're
it's like, what are you going to tell him?
Speak to God.
Oh, the old Christian rock thing where you can hear the capital H. Love it. That's interesting to me. Hatch and a hatch. Love a hat and a hat. I also think I really love that flashback with Ethan, because it's so creepy. Because he's so nice to her. And like, it's kind of clear to me that he has a little crush on her. And then
she's so
like,
clearly very drugged up.
She's so out of it and like, you know, drugged and slash Stockholm syndromed or whatever. And Ethan is like being so nice to her. And, it's creepy, but, they do start to muddy the question of like, are all the others bad guys, right? Cause this question of good and evil comes up with the others. Cause Ethan's like, we're good guys. Like, we're good people. We just want to protect your baby. He's kidnapped her and drugged her. So we don't really believe him, but like, you know, by his definition, maybe they're good, but like more pertinently, Claire says this thing about when she's talking about Alex, she's like, she wasn't like the rest of them. She was good. So Claire is sort of implying the rest of them are evil, but just sort of this like idea of complicating the villains, which is what Lost, I think, always tries to do. But you know, these aren't like, we didn't get flashbacks of these people like sharpening knives or whatever. Like it was, it's more complicated than that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Except for that one part of the flashback where they're sharpening the knives to cut the baby out of her. But yes.
Well, you know, it's, I mean, as we just talked about, Lost is doing a lot of recontextualizing. So they at the very least want us to have that door open. Like, yeah. Do we really know what these guys are up to? And, you know. I not think a great good, first impression, though, is what I'll say.
I think the good versus evil question is also good because they bring up that Ethan was supposed to make a list and then bring somebody back or something. Like, the first thing was a list, and we know from the other 48 days that Goodwin claims that his list was, like, good people. So the idea of who gets to say who's good or bad, I think, is very much at the forefront and will continue to be.
Right.
Even though we have these, you know, villains who are doing bad things. But, you know, Sawyer's technically doing a bad thing.
And then Ethan's gone a bit rogue, like, genuinely, I think, because he actually likes Claire in his own creepy Ethan way, you know? So.
With his Mapother energy.
Mapother energy.
Just so unnecessarily ripped. Did anyone else? Okay, this is a weird like thing for me, but I got this like flash of the Princess Bride when Claire's trying to like upend the vaccine refrigerator, and Rousseau is like too batshit, let's say, to help her. And then she goes, Kate, I need you. And Kate comes running, and it reminds me of Inigo's like, Fezzik, I need you. And Fezzik comes running. So, I'm just saying, like, Kate will be there for you if you need her. She's there for you.
Yeah, Rousseau can be unfocused at times.
Yes, a little distracted, a little dazed.
I'll let you guys know this as people who are usually or occasionally in the same physical space as me. If I need your help, like lifting something or answering a question I can't Google or whatnot, I will yell out, "Hey Neil or Hey Joanna, blankety blank." I will not start help. Then pause and then say, Kate, I need some help in here. Because if you're in a jungle of mystery or really any weird situation and you just hear help, something's wrong and not about lifting.
Something was wrong and Kate would have come running anyway.
No, yes, absolutely. I'm saying just in terms of if you guys hear me yell help, something bad's happening. So if you hear me yell, hey, come help me.
Wow. Okay.
If you want to run away when I feel yell like this help, is like I understand.
This is like the hostage version of a safe word. So if I yell this, someone has a knife to my neck.
Pineapple. Dave, I will come running.
If I yell horse, come help.
Horse?
Horse?
I will come running no matter what. If you are in danger or just need to lift something.
Yeah, I feel like if I was in shouting range, I would come as well.
Yeah.
Like I'm glad we're all going to die together just because, you know, you guys are so loyal. That's nice. Be like, help. No, wait. The ice was thin. I'm in the middle of a lake. Anyway, back to the episode of Lost.
Important question. What do you think Libby and Hurley were doing before they were so rudely interrupted by Claire and her need for therapy?
I'm trying to think of what's in Hurley's flirt game. Like
Hurley's
what?
Like, you like ranch?
How quickly has...
I don't like
that. Is... How sensitive or careful is Hurley being about revealing the fact that he is a multimillionaire to this clinical psychologist that he just met, who he thinks is cute on this island.
Well, I mean, so what they're actually doing is they're playing with Vincent, and I think that's a really good move for Hurley.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, bring the dog over and we'll play, like, fetch with the dog together, and it gives you an activity to do. So, and you can just, like, sort of bond about how cute Vincent is. And then like Hurley will be like, yeah, I used to have an owner. This is kid. He's been missing. Super weird. This is fine.
Somebody saw him in the jungle though. He was taller and wetter, but we still haven't found him.
This is fine.
You guys notice they just steal all the kids?
His dad has been, as you know, Michael has been missing for a while. Anyway,
that's what they're
doing.
His
dog wanders around wherever the fuck it wants, but a kid goes into the jungle one time and never comes back.
They're standing there petting Vincent, talking about all the missing children.
Okay, and so then my other question, though we know the answer to this, but let's pretend we don't. I just want to note the fact that, like, a couple, like, in the Dark Charlie episode, Mr. Echo was, like, marking trees, and now he is cutting
his favorite trees
down.
Because he hates things that are growing.
And looking great. We haven't seen anyone look this great since Sawyer cut a bunch of bamboo in the forest. So thank you.
Lost really does know how to get a good wood chopping scene going.
Yeah.
He looks a lot better once he gets rid of his two little shame pairs.
So should we talk about that Echo and Henry scene? We haven't talked about the Henry of it all in this episode.
Yeah, we could talk about Hatch. Henry's still in the hatch.
Who gets to decide if he's good or evil?
Yeah, he's not being kicked around anymore, but he does seem to be getting a little bit more cheeky, whether it be, you know, overhearing conversations through thin doors or blatantly asking Locke why the doctor gets to make all the decisions. Which, look, Henry, You aren't two seasons and 15 episodes into the show. Only we get to ask those questions of why Jack's making all the decisions. You don't know enough yet. And yeah, gets caught in the bathroom. And when Echo decides to come down and look for some tools to chop down some trees, and then he wants to say something to Henry and makes a confession and then cuts some stuff off his beard, which is how mourning works in some cultures, right? That's what we're talking about, him mourning the two dead others. Did that read as anything different than you guys? Because they are very vague about it in the official podcast, like it's supposed to have another meaning.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That was my assumption, that it was like part of his atonement ritual, the whole like not talking for a while, and then yeah, and then cutting the, I don't know. I don't want to, like, you know, if this is a completely invented white person nonsense, cutting the chin beards off or whatever, like chin braids off, then yeah, but it seemed like that whole thing. I love that scene, cuz you go in there and you're like, what is this guy about to do? And is he about to like kick the shit out of this guy like Saeed did? And what is he going to do? And no, he just like wants to sit and talk to him about like, and apologize for killing these two men who like perpetrated this violence on him. I love the character of Mr. Echo, and I love this scene for it's like, you know, if we're talking about good and evil or whatever, it's like, here's someone who has every right, if he believes this person is an other, has every right to, you know, be mad at him or whatever, and he's asking for forgiveness for like basically defending himself. And I think that that's, I don't know, it's just, I think it's an incredible moment.
I like it a lot. I was just wondering if I missed something specifically with haircutting, or let me ask this more specifically. Was I missing something that was absolutely supposed to tip its hand towards threat or actually asking for forgiveness? Like, if you sit down and you tell a dude that you killed two dudes and you leave, that seems like it could be a threat as much as it is the confession to lighten the soul that Echo needed. Is that ambiguity built into the scene?
I mean, I do think that there's part of it. Part of what Echo is doing is a different type of trying to read Henry Gale. Like, he is... Because it's interesting, because in order for Echo to get into that room and offer this you know, apology, I feel like he assumes that Henry Gale is not who Henry Gale says he is. Or he's trying to figure it out. Like, that, it's an interesting tactic to, like, you know, if you were trying to go the other way from what Saeed was doing, which was just punching him in the face, where it's like, let me tell you this very emotional thing that happened and see if you care about the people that I killed. That's interesting to me. But I don't know if the show is trying to tell us that or if I'm just, like, reading way too deeply into Mr. Echo.
Well, I think Mr. Echo's always, like, trying to
read. He's very wise.
Right? He's always, like, he's just always observing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
According to Quora.com, which is an excellent unverified source of information, tonsure, the act of cutting the hair or shaving the head after the death of an elder member of the family, is an age-old Hindu custom. In Hinduism, the underlying concept is that hair is a symbolic offering to the gods, representing a real sacrifice of beauty, hence shaving your head shows your grief for the departed soul. Hair removal is a sign of purification observance that the male family members, especially those performing the last rites, are expected to undergo. So I don't know. I think, you know, there is a history of hair removal as a moment of grief or observance. I didn't take that as a threat. I thought it was more like a supposed to be a gotcha for the audience. Like, oh shit, he's got a knife, and then it's like, oh, it's just to cut off this because he's has regrets.
I would say, like, maybe it's just confusion, but the reason I read it is maybe, like, half threat, half why Echo wanted to do it, is at this point, Henry Gale gets a lot of looks at people as they're, like, leaving the little torture room. He looked at Saeed like, you didn't break me, you crazy person. He looks, like, at Jack and Locke almost, like, pleadingly, like he's pathetic. But he looks at Mr. Echo like, I don't know what to make of you, and that scares me. And that's the look that I read off of the end of the Henry Gale hair-cutting scene.
He definitely should be afraid of Mr. Echo.
Yeah, I would be. I think the way is it, like, not only is Mr. Echo always watching, but he's very, I think, aware of how he's perceived by other people as this giant, muscular black man who does kind of what he wants and, you know, came in with the woman who shot Shannon.
Has a giant Jesus stick that he carries around.
But he just, you know, never, he's not in a hurry to dissuade anybody from their prejudices of what that type of person is, because he uses it to his bargaining power.
I guess.
Go ahead. Sorry.
You think he's too nice for that?
I think he's trying to be on a righteous path. Genuinely. I think that, you know, to the point of observing, what's interesting is Jack and Locke are doing their thing again, where they're like, we get to decide who knows what when, right? And Locke is sort of making the argument that, like, we can't keep it like that. And Jack's like, oh no, but this is my favorite game. Jack decides who knows what when. And so when Echo comes in, and he see, you know, and they try to, like, hide Henry, and he sees the cot and stuff like that. I mean, it's also the reason, I didn't realize it at the time, but it's also the reason at the start of the episode that Locke won't let Claire go get Jack because he doesn't want her in the hatch, because he doesn't want her knowing, you know. So it's like, not even Claire gets to know, like, who's in the circle, who knows. It's Saeed and Jack and Locke, and are they the only ones on hatch duty then? Mm-hmm. Like, so you know, which is the,
yeah, and it's interesting when when Henry and Jack are in the bathroom, and Henry starts to ask how many, like, he's trying to figure out how many people, you know, he's like, how many of you are there? Or he's going to ask, like, how many people know about this or something like that, you know? It's interesting.
Yeah, but it's also like, well, anyway, yes. question for another time, perhaps.
Can we talk about who's not calm in this episode? At the end?
Yes! Okay, first of all, though, I do like that he chopped up some mangoes for Henry. Like, even prisoners deserve not to get scurvy, so that's nice. But yes, let us talk about Locke. Like,
are you the genius or the person who thinks they'll never be the genius?
I mean, Henry's great, great stuff all the time, but, like, Locke lost his cool in a way, he knows that Henry can hear him. Why did you not go outside and scream into the jungle? Why did you give him the satisfaction of clattering those dishes on the ground when you've already found out that the doors are thin enough that he could hear you? John, come on.
John's not being a very good strategist these past couple of weeks. He's got that button fever.
Well, he seems more anxious, and I think it's a combination of the button. He also is now probably worrying a little bit about Claire, although he doesn't seem super concerned about what happens to Claire after that initial, like, I'll go get Jack scene. He's very consumed by what's going on in the hatch.
But, like, they have been tearing down all this, like, weird security things. So, like, a couple weeks ago, he was the only one who knew how to change the combination on the lock, the thing that had all the guns and heroin. And then very slowly, that's all been stripped away. And so, like, even last episode, where Jack was like, I'll let the button go off. Like, I don't care. I'm doing this just because it's, like, convenient enough for me. But so he's kind of, like, the last... I think he's being drawn taut by all of his power being stripped away, which isn't necessarily telling John what he can't do, but it's close enough to get him all pissed off.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Henry Gale of it all is delightful to me, not just because they're discussing novelists, great novelists, but I mean, like, that's just a, I don't know. I like this guy, and I like his scenes. He's great.
Well, and what's fascinating about it is that's not something that you would expect to work on John Locke, because John Locke is a very smart, strategic person so far in our experiences with him. But he really did catch him on the right day.
All right, let's wrap up some corners before we head down to the storm. This is the part where we pick things in different categories that we've made up. The Jungle Mystery Moment we already covered, Escape Hatch in a Hatch and Fake Beards. The Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to the person who takes the nastiest spill in the episode. This one has to be Drugged Claire.
Claire takes
a spill. No accent so corner this week.
She's wearing my favorite of her outfits, though. The black top with the red pants. It's like, oh, it's a Buffy Summers look. I'm really into it. So she looked good. She fell.
Just needs to keep it up off the ground. The Leslie Arts Memorial Ironic Statement Awards goes to Ethan, who says to Claire about Aaron, hey, nobody's going to take him from you unless that's what you want. Meanwhile, we've already seen Aaron taken from Claire twice.
And we're pretty sure it's not what she wants at this point.
Yeah, it's not what she wants. All right, it's time for the Jungle of Kistery moment. Who, in this episode, really need to get their kiss on? Joanna, because you put your answer in the doc, you get to go first and claim it for yourself.
Well, I will really quickly say that to refer to the Claire thing really quickly, I like that it's also a parallel to, like, her, that the fact that Claire was going to put Aaron up for adoption. So, like, the stuff she says to him at the end of the episode, you know, about, like, I was going to let them take you, and blah, 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 you're mine, blah, 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 is also connected to her earlier adoption stuff, which I like, obviously. All right, Jungle of Kistery moment. First, I'm going to reveal the nomination from one of our listeners in our Patreon Slack. Steph has suggested Locke and Henry should lock lips. So
they share a love of books.
A love of books, and you know, no one can get right under your skin the way that Henry got under Locke's skin if you don't, you know, feel that frisson of attraction as well. So Locke and Henry via Steph. For me, I'm going to introduce a rogue element into this segment. I'm going to introduce myself and shirtless, sweaty, tree-chopping Mr. Echo. So that is my jungle of
regardless
history.
Of what that smells like, having been on an island for 40 days.
I trust Mr. Echo to smell better than a lot of other people on that island.
Oh, you know what? That's a fair point.
Neil, what you got?
Well, I believe that a lot of the most successful Jungle of Kistery moments are based on tension. And who has more tension than Kate and Rousseau when Kate is holding a gun at her and Rousseau's like, do it, shoot me, whatever.
And then they just lean in and kiss.
Yeah, like, why isn't, because Kate gives her this look like, oh my god, like, I can't, like, this was harder than I thought it would be. Why isn't she just like, hey, you want to make out?
Love it. Love that.
I'm going to pick Rousseau's hanging out around the camp, waiting to get a glimpse of the baby or for someone to talk to her. And she runs across Mr. Echo, who's like cutting down trees. She's like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "These are my favorite trees." And then they just make out.
Wow. You made up a whole scene.
Uh-huh. I like it. Yeah, I guess Claire could kiss Rousseau, but I guess we have more time for that in the future. Maybe. They're both still alive at the end of this episode.
What about Libby and Claire? Like, that's what Libby does to calm her down.
Just close your eyes. Listen to the waves.
Should have done Hurley and Claire. Obviously, Hurley was just about to, like, close the deal when Claire came up. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway.
Book club time.
All right. So I just really want to quickly mention, so we talked about the Hemingway versus Dostoevsky thing. Henry's trying and failing to read Brothers Karamazov. Have either of you read that book?
Mm-mm.
No.
Yeah, it's a toughie. Meanwhile, back on the beach, Sawyer in his lovely new glasses is reading the book, the 1977 novel Lancelot by Walker Percy. I'm reading this from the Lostpedia stub about the book. The book is about Lancelot Lamar, a lawyer who, when he discovers that he is not the father of his youngest daughter, kills his wife by blowing up their house. He ends up by being confined in a mental institution where he then dwells on the memories of his frightful past. There is a surrealistic element where reality blends with delirium. So reality blending with delirium feels like this episode, but someone not being the father of a daughter and the house blowing up. Why? That's what Kate did. So, yeah. You know, some fun connections, you know.
It's very meta.
Mm-hmm, that's what they love to do with these books. So it's always fun to look up what titles people are reading on the show. So that's book club.
The official Lost podcast check-in, which we will do before breaking for the storm. I don't think I want many comments on this because I don't want it to get super stormy, but it is in the calm because, Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof, the showrunners, were releasing an official podcast weekly to go with new episodes of Lost when it was airing. And this one is paired with the maternity leave one. It's about Ethan coming back. Damon Lindelof says, "One of the things we pride ourselves on the show, for whatever it's worth, because there are a lot of things not to be proud of, is that, you know, when someone dies on Lost, they're dead. Or that's really like, we're trying not to be sneaky, and they're going to come back as zombies. Or, you know, hopefully you will learn over time as an audience when someone buys the farm." And Carlton Cuse says, "Year 7, you're going to regret that zombie comment." And Damon Lindelof says, "I am. I'm really going to regret that. You know, Year 7 is actually subtitled Lost Zombies. And it's just anybody we've killed off over the years coming back and trying to eat brains." That's the podcast check-in. And thank you so much for joining us.
Would watch.
10 out of 10 would watch Lost Zombies. We will join you for some stormy thoughts after this.
All right, now is the time of the podcast where we like to thank our Small Council subscribers. These are Patreon folks at the $10 level or above. They get a shout-out on the podcast. They get to watch movies with us. They get mailbag episodes. They are a cool crew. So we would like to thank Jamie Britt, Saquon Gatling, Joe Jenka, Bryce Quine, Iris Storm, Melissa Slaughter, Great on Toast, Victoria McDuffie, Marianne Donnelly, Jim Scott, Anne Moreau, Stacey Winkleplex, Jocelyn, Juan DeMello, Cody Draghi, Fiona Grimm, Aaron, Brian Rapp, Holly Hunt, Madison Ray, and Carrie. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to add our thanks to Jason Blackmer, Robert Bowles, Chuck Parkey, Cameron Graham, Mark Jewett, Tom Shapansky, Micknick, James Barta, Shane O'Reilly, Jocelyn Land, Callie Serrano, Jeremiah Perez, Michael Wood, Sarah Gates, Steve Bolivari, Jane Phelps, Christina McNeesett, Brian Latino, Valerie Harvey, and Ben Block. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans, including Maggie Paulin, Benjamin Jacoby, Matt Hayes, Tiffany Welker, Laura Kaminsky, Crystal Shares Roberts, I think that's how you do it, Ann Ledford, Wendy Marshall, Joseph Johnson, Heather Carpenter, Brenda Moran, Russell Brody, Carrie Labagia. Oh, okay. That's it. There's a little spice at the end of that one. James Principal, Nell, right? Nell. Two L's. Cool. Samantha Sherburn, Georgia Monroe Cook, Emily, David Colley, and Jen Becky. Thank you all very much.
And we're back for the storm. Joanna, who comes back as a zombie at the end of Lost?
Zaid? Yeah.
Oh.
I had to like...
Doesn't Locke technically, isn't that he's sort of zombie-ish?
Sort of, but the whole idea that like when somebody dies on Lost, they're dead is a dumb thing for them to say.
Well, I mean, I do like that at least he was like, you're seven, you're going to regret that. But like, Zaid's a... Like, Locke comes back, doesn't come back, though, because that's just, like, an apparition. It's not actually Locke. But Zaid is actually, like, a walking dead version of Zaid. Or at least an emotionally dead version of Zaid. I don't know. I hate what happens to Zaid is the point. So, love you guys, Cuse and Lindelof. Sorry you made that comment about zombies, because you're wrong.
About zombies. And then ran out of ideas years later. Great. Where do we want to start for this many spoilery thought storm?
I want to talk with my storm version of the Leslie Arce Memorial Ironic Statement Award.
Okay, let's do it.
Son tells Claire a mother should never leave her child, when of course that is exactly what Son does in order to go back to the island to find Jin, and then... More egregiously, we're just going to roll out all the final season sins here. Zaid, number one. Number two is Jin staying in the submarine or wherever they are as it's getting flooded, to stay with Son and leave their daughter an orphan. I hate when Jin does that. Anyway, so Son saying a mother should never leave her child is ironic.
Yeah, and we know Claire just squirrel babies it up. Squirrel babies are to her heart content.
Well,
heart's content.
Claire never leaves her baby if her baby is that squirrel skull. You know what I mean?
I feel it by the end.
Actually, she literally does. She like when she gets like lured into the jungle by the man in black posing as Christian, she just leaves Aaron on like a leaf. That Sawyer finds Aaron on later.
Well, there's a lot of good babysitters around.
She's like, you just stay here. Okay, well, I want to start there, like, in seriousness. The Kate-Aaron-Claire connection. At what point do you feel like they, I mean, we don't know. We'll probably try to ask a creator this at some point, but, like, at what point do you feel like that's something that they know that they're going to do something with in the future? Because, like, it's so... tidy that like Kate delivers Aaron and that she's like such a protector of Claire and Aaron in this episode, and the fact that she winds up doing what she does for Aaron and then eventually Claire, like that becomes like Kate in the Jack and Sawyer triangle gets so worn out, and then eventually the flip switches and she becomes all about Aaron and all about Claire. Like she goes back to the island in the end not really for Sawyer, it's for Claire. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just curious, like, when they knew that they wanted to do something with that, or was it just a complete coincidence that they're laying some of those seeds right here, you know?
Yeah, this one feels really tough because you can kind of see it organically happening, especially as you were mentioning in the calm about how some of the best Kate stuff is when she sticks up for Claire, and then also some of the best Kate stuff is when Jack's not around. So it's completely within the realm of possibility that they just sort of figured it out as they went. But the delivery thing is really interesting because it's like if they didn't have an idea of how they wanted to Kate and Claire to be sort of, you know, at least loosely tied together, that's an incredibly lucky guess. Or, you know, they got incredibly lucky to hit that the first time. So.
Yeah, because it makes one of the best moments in the, like, time-hopping segment mm-hmm. later on when, mm-hmm. like, Sawyer sees, it watches Kate in the past deliver Aaron. Yeah.
I think it's not even until they come up with the idea of the Oceanic Six or whatever it is. And like, wouldn't it be fun if you didn't think one of them was a baby? Other than that, I think it's a bunch of happy accidents of just trying to connect characters to each other and being like, Claire needs to latch onto somebody. I mean, like, we kind of got Charlie because of weird things, but like, let's give her Kate. Let's give her like Locke. And then like when Kate and Claire really works, they're like, ooh, let's zero in on this. The sort of thing you're talking about in The Calm where they'll chase things that are working. But like, yeah, I think it's just a happy accident that Kate happened to be there when Claire was born. I don't think that point like marks Kate as Aaron's keeper necessarily.
Yeah,
I think because it also has to be kind of surprising that she takes Aaron and she raises Aaron. Or at least I remember the first time I watching it being like, oh, like maybe she's taking Alex's responsibility, but no, she like genuinely loves him because there isn't a lot in Kate in these first couple of seasons that are like, what she needs is a kid, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think you're right, honestly, that this came about when they were trying to work their way back from like who would be the trickiest Oceanic Six for you to try to like figure it out. Because I will tell you this, and hopefully we can do it with our comm listeners when we get there. I had the most fun every episode checking in with Diana, asking her who she thought the Oceanic Six were. And I kept like a running list, you know what I mean? And there's like calculus you do because we'll get there. We'll talk about it that season, but like they so craftily move people around. You're like, oh, so-and-so's on the freighter. Obviously they're going to make it. And then they don't, or like whatever it is. So like the fact that they're like, oh, one of them's going to be Aaron, but it's not going to be with Claire is like, I think you're right. I think that's the genesis of that. So it's
interesting. Yeah. Well, and they also, as we talked about earlier, they do a good job of figuring out which character, which performances they're getting the most out of. I do think they also, at times, they chase the pairs that work. And I think this is why a lot of the Charlie stuff that's really good is like when they pair Charlie with Hurley, you know,
and Desmond.
Yeah. So it's like it's the pairs that we maybe didn't think about in the first season that I almost want to say that they probably came to that out of necessity to be like, we can't just keep sticking Kate and Jack and Sawyer together because that does wear thin super fast.
What does me every time I see the couch mean?
Okay, so like I put a note to talk about the couch because like this isn't the first time we've seen the couch, you know, like in the hatch, like Locke and Jack watch the movie from the couch and like stuff like that. But there, it feels
someone's about to die on that couch.
Yeah, there's extended couch time, and now I'm like, oh my god, there's just gonna be so much death around that couch, that shitty hatch couch, very soon. So. Yeah, every time I see that couch, I'm like, ugh, that's where we're going.
It does look like Jack's getting a good nap in, though. That couch does, I mean, it's small, but it looks comfy.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, well, it must be because there's also the bunk beds, and so he's obviously made a choice now to transition to couch nap. So maybe sure. the couch is ideal.
I bet those bunk bed mattresses really suck. That's what I bet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I don't.
It just like has a whole bunch of like sweat baked into them.
Yeah, if they were
like,
if
hatch stink.
If that was a pleasant place to live, Desmond would not have run away so quickly.
Yeah, if he had like a nice like Casper mattress. This episode not brought to you by Casper mattress, but let's say that Desmond had like a nice pillow top on that bunk bed. Maybe he would have chilled out for a little bit and like explained what was going on before he ran off. How close are we to Desmond's return?
Oh, good question.
A few episodes to go.
We're still several episodes from Michael's return.
Yes. And several episodes from Ben's name. Ooh, actually, which is, I got DM'd a question from a listener. This is Will who asks, I do have a question regarding one of them, which I just finished listening to. For all the talk about whether Rousseau recognizes Ben, I was really hoping you guys would address the equally bewildering time-space interaction. Does Ben recognize Saeed? Remember in the future or future past where Saeed literally shoots Ben in the stomach and it's like a catalyst for a lot of the show's most pivotal events. I was really hoping you guys would at least mention this moment during the storm, if not analyze it. I guess it doesn't matter much, but I always baffled by this moment and how it affected Ben's development. And I was genuinely surprised when no one brought it up. Yeah, Saeed shoots Tiny Ben. in the past.
Yeah, but like that was a while ago, you know. I feel like
also Ben stole Rousseau's daughter, but she's never seen him before, so it's like it's one of those.
Well, that's what they were saying.
Or he does, and he's just, you know, he's undercover. So
I feel like
I'm a torturer was not a news to him. He was just like, ah, shit, here comes Saeed, the dude who shot me in the stomach when I was
I think that if you're rewatching this, and you know that that's
Ben. Here's the answer. I found it with a quick Google search on Reddit. So in season six, Miles explains to Hurley how they can't change anything. What happened, happened. And Hurley points out that if that was true, then Ben would remember being shot by Saeed as a child. And then someone responds, when Richard takes Ben to the temple to be healed, he said that Ben wouldn't remember what happened to him. So
there we go.
Close that little loop conveniently with the good old
the temple,
which is my least favorite lost plot device. The temple pool. Basically everything's
zombie temple.
Like not my fave, but yeah.
So there you go. Well, zombie temple, zombie temple water. It's magic zombie temple.
Richard,
waters.
Richard Alpert again. Richard Alpert's like, I predict that this will be an issue in the writer's room, so let me help them out by erasing Ben's memory of this specific incident. I wanted to talk about the positioning of Mr. Echo in this episode, because we know that, you know, they had certain plans for the Tailies. We'll get a lot. We've already talked a little bit about it, but we'll get a lot into, like, the Libyan Anna Lucia of it all in a few episodes. But the Mr. Echo thing, which we've also talked about, like, it's just so clear that they want to do so much with him, that they didn't get to do because the actor doesn't want to be on the show anymore. But like this episode, you know, the fact that like Jack and Locke and Saeed are the only ones who know about Ben, and then Mr. Echo knows. And, you know, that like he's constantly like in there mixing up with John, like doing all this stuff. And it just feels like they're really pushing him more and more towards the center. That's where they want him to be, in the thick of it. You know what I mean? And it just, like, every time I see that, I see, like, the potential for Mr. Echo. I get bummed all over again for the fact that it doesn't come to fruition. So,
yeah. Because what's great about him is he's such a uniquely calm presence in a lot of these scenes. You know, when we first meet Mr. Echo, he's an imposing, dangerous figure. And then we learn that he's a very regretful figure, and we learn why he has so many regrets. But I think we're to the point now where he almost becomes kind of a blank slate, where it's like now they can start to use him in, now that he's in the camp and they've dealt with the Anna Lucia stuff and he doesn't have to be around her anymore. She can go help Jack build his army, I guess. I don't know what Anna Lucia is still doing. She's probably still doing tarps. But
not getting paid for this episode is what Anna Lucia is doing.
Not being in this damn episode. But yeah, I think that it's very clear that they had some plans to make him sort of the calm center of what is becoming a very chaotic season.
I would just wish that, like, maybe he, you know, became like holy warrior, like paladin, like a D&D paladin, where it's just like, he's, you know, nice and he doesn't want to do anything. And then when shit's going wrong in the season three finale, he takes his Jesus stick and just crushes some dudes. And then he grows his beard down to his knees because that's how many people he has to mourn.
But that's what you would expect from a character like that.
What
Lost does is different. And I think that's why it works really well.
True. But I can't say that what they do I like better. But yes, I get your point. All right. Let's, before we talk about Teasing the Sun episode, when Tom says him, what did the writer's room mean? Asked Joanna Robinson. So we're pre-Jacob for sure. And as we've discussed previously in the storm, we're probably pre-Ben because at this point, Henry Gale's still a one-off, torture victim. So, do they think, do we think they had a him in mind? Do we think it was the capital H him?
Are they going
to double back?
Well, really quickly, I will say that when I was, I mean, it's probably pretty obvious to people listening, but when I was alluding into the com, like about performers that they expanded, like Henry Ian Cusick and Michael Emerson are top of that list, right? These are two characters, right. Two actors in this season, season two, who were hired, to do just a few episodes and became absolutely central to the end game of Lost. So, I think that's a fascinating thing that happened. Do we know that it's like entirely pre-Jacob? Cause it wasn't the concept of like, I believe that Lindelof has said the idea of immortal entities, like a force for good and a force for evil sort of, testing mankind was an original concept for the show, so that they had that planned. I'm gonna look some stuff up while you guys talk about it.
I mean, I think you're right in that they planned it was like a place that, you know, immortals would test people for good and evil, but in terms of like naming them singular and specifically naming the villain a male singular person, I don't know if they would think beyond like our Satan fill-in, you know, goes here.
But is it clear that they're referencing a villain there? Because like, if we think that the others are maybe some of them good people working for some ineffable force, you know, the others don't think they're bad guys because they think they're working for Jacob. So they think they're working for the good guy. So like, then Tom would be referring to Jacob. I mean, I think he's referring to Ben when all said and done, but, be referring to Jacob, you know?
Oh, see, my thing is like in this level of, if you're sitting down with, you know, the writers and you're trying to figure it out, what you want is like the hint of a Dr. Claw, because then it's like there's this mysterious force that's controlling anything and we could decide if it's cool or not when we get there. That's what it reads more like to me. So like, it's like our Satan is a him. Maybe he's a fallen angel version of Satan, whatever, but he's, you know, testing our losties. But yeah, I guess you're right. I don't know for sure how the writer's room is thinking about the others. So like season one, they were definitely like jungle creeps. So they would definitely be what I'd categorize as antagonists. They have been complicated more here, but the long and the short of it is they're stealing babies. So I don't really know if they're, if the writers even know beyond that what they're going to do with them. Like, I don't even know, like, if we're talking about polar bear cages on the other side of the island in some sort of back room yet or anything, or if they have their own society.
So
seems weird.
Yeah. So, Javier Grillo-Marxwatch, once guest on this show, who in his great essay, The Lost Will and Testament, about his time on the series Lost, says, while the idea was that the island called out to people and brought them as part of a greater Medician conflict, a Medician conflict we discussed at the time, is that idea, that religious concept of like good versus evil, sort of like, it goes back to the Iranian prophet Mani, and it's like everything can be boiled down to a struggle between good and evil. He says, so brought them in as part of a Manichean conflict. I didn't once in 2 years and change hear the name Jacob or Man in Black. The idea that people were being recruited to come to the island as part of this greater agenda was never brought up during my time on the show, even though by all accounts it eventually became the crux of the series finale arc, the series final arc. So like, but this idea of like, two players, one black, one white, which is like it, from the very beginning there. Yeah. I don't think it's too far of a stretch to be like, and we cited one of them, we're going to refer to one of them as a he, and whether or not that he in this concept, context is the black or the white, you know, I couldn't say what they would decide what that would be. I think that
it is interesting.
I think they're trying to make the case that the others, like, aren't evil in this, as early as this.
Definitely making the case that, like, something else is going on with the others.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just that they're being dicks to the survivors. Like, there's some other, and I actually kind of like this as, remember when we talked, I believe you talked to Damon Lindelof about this. This might have come up in the Javi interview as well, where it was like the idea of like what's in the hatch was one of those things where it was like a mystery. And they were like, we'll just leave it a mystery until we can figure out what it is. this almost feels like one of those things where it's like, let's, you know, there is somebody in charge now that we're expanding what our understanding of the others is. It's just a him for now. And eventually the answer becomes Ben Linus. Because I think Joanna's right. Like in canon, who Tom is ultimately talking about there is Ben. I think. So, maybe just, one of those fun mysteries that they had to figure out as they went.
We're going to have to get to the bottom of this somehow in the future here on the Storm Podcast. Joanna, how does this episode tease next week's episode?
So next week's episode is the one where Sun suspects she might be pregnant. So all the, like, all of Sun's opinions about motherhood and Claire being like, well, you're not a mother, are you? Will sort of, you know, and I believe the flashback for that episode is about their like infertility struggles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when Claire's like, you're not a mother, are you? Or whatever, like, that's really shitty thing to say to a woman who struggled with fertility. So, not that Claire knew that, but,
but the audience is going to feel bad later.
Yeah, it does look great for old Claire next week.
Because we were kind of on Claire's side there for a second.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, so it's a Sun and Jin. Like, Sun thinks she's pregnant. I think this is the infertility one. If not, then the infertility one is like not till next season with Juliet. So I don't remember. But like the whole idea of like Sun thinking she's pregnant is in next week's episode for sure. So
more subtitles next week on Lost. That's true, because it's Korean. Anyway, cool. Anything else before we take our leave of maternity leave? Nope. Good.
No, it's a good episode.
Joanna took a deep breath in.
I like this episode, though. More than I thought I was going to, if that makes sense.
I mean, by the end, it's really cooking, both with mystery and characters and... It's definitely strong. But we are in the divot of, oh my God, season two still happening. And we'll continue next week with the whole truth. 24 episodes of Lost might be too many episodes of Lost for one season to contain. Because it does sort of make it so they're working year round in order to just produce 20 some episodes of television. Blah, 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 blah. Let's tell people where they could find more of our non-Lost work around the internet until we're back next week for the whole truth. Let's start this week with Neil Miller.
Oh, well, you can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, over on Twitter at rejects at one perfect shot. And like we mentioned earlier, don't forget to follow at Storm Podcast, because your opinion on the Jungle of Kistery moment is everything to us.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I need to look up who won last week's poll. Okay, keep going.
Okay. In that case, we'll very specially let me go here while Joanna's going. You could find me on Twitter at DA7E. You could find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where I talk about other pop culture happenings and, you know, panic about viral outbreaks, as one does. And I will be telling you on Twitter and here on the show to not only not fall down, but don't touch your face and wash your hands. Joanna,
all right,
where can... Oh, go ahead.
The Jungle of History poll last week for the episode One of Them was Rousseau and Saeed, Sawyer and the Frog, Hurley and Livy, and Saeed and a Bloody Henry Gale. The winner resoundingly is Hurley and Livy. So we are rooting for the
crazy kids.
Woo!
We have choice but to ship / stan, I guess. I don't know what the...
Hibby? Lurley?
I like Hibby better.
Hibby it is. I'm going to nominate Hibby until the end of time. That's my new plan. Yes, you can find me at Joe Wrote This. You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I already said where. And you can hear me talking about the HBO series The Outsider on the Vanity Fair podcast, Still Watching.
Excellent. Don't fall down. Don't touch your face. We'll see you next week.